back, pulls up the three, boom, knocks it down. Curry from the corner at three, puts it in.
For overtime, makes it, Garrett, Murray.
Welcome to the first edition of the MVP cast for 2019. A happy new year and all that from me, Mark Woods. And it's a really big year, especially for one of British basketball's giants. A milestone event coming up this Friday night. There's been years in the making. The opening of the Newcastle Eagles Community Arena. The man who is behind it all joins me now, Paul Blake. Welcome to the MVP cast. Happy new year.
Happy new year, Mark.
This has been a long while in the making, and I guess that's probably an understatement from your point of view. When I was looking back to see when the first mention of this came, and I couldn't find just the very first one. When was the first time you sat down with your wife, Sam, around the breakfast table and said, you know what might be an idea? Let's have a building.
we were trying to work this out ourselves the other week, and I would say it's probably as far back as about 2005. I'd taken the club on in 99, so 99-2000 season. And I suppose we'd done that first 5 or 6 years, and the first 3 or 4 were extremely tough. And obviously 5-6 seasons in, we start to win trophies. And I suppose at that point we were starting to think, right, this is a longer term project now. You know, until that point it was really year by year, can this work? So I think it's probably then at the point that, you know, season 5, season 6 into what we call the project, where we can see that this is sustainable, that you start to then think, right, what's next? And that was the conversation. So yeah, I suppose, you know, 13 years.
You came in off the back of the John Hall era, but also off the back of the decline of the BBL after the golden era. So, you know, when clubs went from being awash with cash, people pumping millions into them, to having to suddenly be self-sufficient and look after their own finances, etc. I mean, how tricky was it looking back when you're taking on a club that had gone from the owner of Newcastle United essentially throwing a blank check almost at it, to trying to make this work and not go bust yourself, put food on the table and pay players and all that? How tricky was that at the time when you look back on it now?
So I actually came in at the hiatus. I started at Newcastle United in 97. And was marketing manager for the basketball, the ice hockey and the rugby and the Falcons for the first 6 months, which then very quickly became general manager for the basketball and the ice hockey. And it was 2 years later that I took the club on. And to answer your question, clearly it was incredibly tough, because ultimately the operation was not financially sustainable. You know, the 3 years of the sporting club was not a sustainable scenario for any of the three clubs in their different sports. They all lost significant sums of money, and you know, that's the reality is, in most sports, that is how professional sport is run and is historically run in this country. The clubs lose money, you know, a willing chairman covers the whole. Now we in taking the club on, we're never going to have that luxury. We had to be break even from day one. That was very, very difficult. We still had 2 years of the Newcastle Arena contract to see out, which had been signed by the football club. That was very difficult to see through. I have to say, from the arena's perspective, once we got out of those 2 years, the following, I'm going to say, probably another eight, nine years, we were still at the arena after that point. The following 8 years, they were incredibly supportive. We just found ways to work together. So, but it was tough. Absolutely, the first, you know, those first 5 or 6 years that I was talking about at the start there, were very, very nip and tuck. It was a, you know, very much a roller coaster ride, and we were just finding different ways to break even every season until we really worked out how the model could work or not.
Do you think there's any way, if you look back at it now, that sporting club model could work? Because obviously we've seen other places in Europe, and obviously it's big clubs, it's your Real Madrid, your Barcelona's now, your Bayern Munich's. I mean, is there anything you think that a lesson that could have been learnt and with hindsight could have been changed?
My answer to that would be no, because I've seen this a lot over the last 20 years. It's pointless us trying to look into Europe to replicate European sporting club models, because the way most European countries operate sport from school upwards is very, very different to how we operate in this country. We seem to have created our own culture that doesn't exist in those countries, and they lend themselves to, you know, as I've spoken to you about in the past, every sort of small village and town has a sporting club sat on the corner of the village, which has its football pitches, its indoor basketball, volleyball, handball, tennis courts, depending on which country it is, might have rugby pitches as well, you know. But obviously they're very few and far between for the majority of Europe. But they all have this understanding and cultural understanding of how a sporting club works and how it gets funded. We don't have that here. So it was trying to pioneer a model that could work, absolutely could work. I mean, the Falcons are still here. We're still here. We could bolt ourselves together moving forward. I doubt that would happen, but we both have learned a lot from those days, and it's not an unachievable thing to do. But you'd have to ask yourself the question why you're doing it, and the reason it happens the way it does in Europe is that they are community-based models, and they're all about trying to drive mass participation in their collection of sports.
Yours is a community arena, and we'll come on to what the sort of makeup of the day-to-day life that will be maybe later on. But is it really a sense that you've had to go out in the course of this, obviously in finding funding from different sources and partnerships, but really almost create a funding model that's not been seen before or very rarely been seen before in this country to replicate in a way what they've got in mainland Europe?
Yes, yeah, oh, exactly that. The best way we could find possible with the best partners that we could find, and not dissimilar a model to Leicester's, and what Kevin Routledge and Russell and the guys at Leicester's worked on to get their building in place. So very strong relationship with the city council, building of a strong relationship with the local enterprise partnership, strong relationship with Sport England, and also a partnership relationship with a local FE college to become our anchor tenant essentially in the building. So those are the main key partners, and then a number of other funders that are supporting different parts of the building from there. I would have to say as well a rather large loan,
which will be the thing that I guess will sit and prey on your mind for the next few years.
Yeah, essentially we've traded up renting for buying is the best way to explain it, and we now have a mortgage.
Just bigger than your standard house mortgage.
Yeah. Somewhat bigger, yes. But it's in place. It's part of a business model that we think will work. Time will tell with that. And all I can say really in that respect is time told with the club itself. It's 20 years last year consistently. Single operation, same shareholders now as took the club on in 1999. So I've no reason to believe we can't move this on another step now with what we have here.
You broke ground 2017. We've been regularly updated with photos of you in a hard hat at various stages of this construction project and different photos. What has this been like as a learning experience, developing a construction scheme and a project that's, everyone you talked about, you know, what the designs were going to be like, what you wanted out of it. But the reality is anyone who's ever even built an extension knows is that can be so much different when you put it into practice.
It's been an eye-opening process. That's one that I'm not sure I would want to do again. It's a completely different world to what I'm used to and what the organisation is used to. So we've been effectively running yet another different project off to the side of continuing to run the club and the foundation and trying to make sure that we're spinning the three big plates without any of them falling and shattering. But the last 12 months have been incredibly tough. And I mean, even now, you know, as we've still got 4 days to go here and there are 22 contractors on site this morning and it's still going. But it's very, at this stage now, it's extremely rewarding. You know, we just want to be here all the time. So we were, I think we had 3 days off over Christmas and the whole of the rest of the time was here. And it's tough, but it's quite fun.
What was it like when they turn around to you and say, and you can tell me the quantities, etc., but say, it's going to be a while because we've got some soil and no one wants it?
that has been the biggest difficulty with the project. So the first thing I would say, if you've ever watched Grand Designs and people that are trying to build on the side of a hill, those projects are often the ones that encumber the biggest difficulties. and ours was the same, but on a far larger scale. So we had an ongoing issue with movement of soil from this site to various sites, to be honest with you, that have been able to take the soil. But that's been extremely challenging. And if that had happened on a normal commercial basis, and the soil had gone to sites, to a normal site and not sites where partners have been supportive and helped us across the city, it would have cost hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pounds, and it would have killed the project. So it's been the most difficult part of this project. We found solutions, and my one word of advice to anyone moving forward would be if you can find a flat piece of land, build on a flat piece of land.
Surely you could have just the dead of night dropped it in a netball court or somewhere.
No, unfortunately not. If I had a pound for everybody that said, why don't you just drop it in the Tyne, that would have covered the cost. But unfortunately it's not as simple as that. And we found solutions, but that was, you know, joking apart, that's been the biggest sticking point in the whole project. We were very keen to work with this site. It's roadside on Scotswood Road. It's very visible coming into the city. You know, it's the main arterial road up to St. James's Park. So we were very keen to work with this site. We're very keen to work in this area as well, because we've worked in the West End of Newcastle on a community basis for many, many years. And, it feels like a bit of a spiritual home for us, really.
I can remember driving past, I think it was October time, and obviously there was still, the car park was still not a car park. It was still very much a construction site. But you could see the frame of the building was up, the windows are up. And then a few weeks later, you get handed the set of keys to a building yet not complete, but still, here are your keys to your building. What's the emotions like after so many years of thinking and pondering and scheming to get this?
It's a good question. It's a hard one to answer, in the sense that I still feel that we're not there yet. I suppose I go back to what I said before. The one thing I get from this is, first things first, everything is a lot easier all of a sudden. We're not having to haul things out into containers that are hundreds of metres away from the main building. Everything's here at, you know, two steps away. We've got offices in the building that we play in, which is, you know, a first for the last decade. So it just everything feels a lot easier. Driving in on the morning to see the building in front of you, it's kind of hard to get your head around that a little bit. And it's all very, very exciting, but for me it's always going to be tinged with, as always, I hate to say it, the fact that we've got a financial business model to make happen. So it's always going to be tinged with, right, this is business, it's still business. It's great to have this, but it's still business, and we've got to make it work.
In terms of what we get, you walk through the door, you've had the tour, talk us through what's in the building.
Okay, so you walk into, from a car park of 250 or so spaces, straight off of the dual carriageway. You walk 20 metres into the main auditorium space, which is about 350 metres squared. Reception, cafe, club shop, and on a match night, all of your hot dogs, nachos, popcorn, beer, soft drinks, everything you could want to purchase in that main auditorium foyer space. You then just move ultimately via three doors straight into the main arena space off that foyer. So on the ground floor, very straightforward. Off to the left, we have changing rooms, four changing rooms downstairs for Wheelie community use, all very sizable. All of your accessible changing as well for wheelchair programs, particularly wheelchair basketball. And then off to the right of the foyer space, a big hall store and a kitchen. And the kitchen is the big one for us for being able to now start to expand our corporate offering, hospitality offering on match nights. And equally educational offerings during the week, because that kitchen is going to be used by the catering academy at Newcastle College, and equally the students of that catering academy are going to be working with us on match nights as a real work environment and other events. So that's your ground floor. First floor, on the front of the building, there's a gym. Two hospitality spaces that will cater for up to 350. One with a lovely new bar, very smart bar, granite worktops, glass fronted, all very smart. Some office spaces upstairs and two more changing rooms. And then you walk out from that front block onto a balcony. And slightly different Sports Central. You can walk from that balcony straight down onto the court side. So effectively, our hospitality offering will mean that you can move from the 350 space about 5 meters to your seats, and that's a massive move forward for us in terms of trying to work in that area with a product that we think is going to be a very credible product.
And is one of those changing rooms specifically for the Eagles, with all the kind of gadgets and mod cons and big screens that you'd expect from a pro basketball team?
Not yet, but it will be. That will be a work in progress. There are changing rooms there. Let me just say that for now. But as we go along here, we'll want to start to add activity like that in into those rooms. I suppose what I will say and what I can say is that when you go into the main playing space, the main hall itself, that's 2,800 seats. We'll also add another 100 to 200 floor seats in on top of that to get up to the 3,000. There are three great big digital screens in the main hall, one per court for in the week, basketball or netball or volleyball or whatever sport might be played on those three courts. But equally, if the team's training, one of those screens can be used for video activity as the team are training. And the guys have been taking advantage of that for the last week or two, which has been absolutely, fantastic, just to be able to get consistent training pattern in place, consistent access to a hall when needed. You know, that's never straightforward in basketball in this country.
So basically, for now on, Fab will be having his 6 a.m. practices 6 days a week.
And that's right.
No one can stop it.
Something like that, yeah, something like that.
I mean, obviously, there's the debt to pay off, but obviously there's the opportunity now that you have to do different things, bring different revenue streams in, etc., and change the way the business model, I guess, has been worked up to now. But how will this, in your eyes, change the way that the team itself can be financed and be competitive when it plays in the BBL or plays elsewhere, perhaps in the future?
So ultimately, if you look at where the sport is in this country on a European stage, the team budgets in Europe, you know, particularly the teams that Leicester were coming up against in the European competitions at the start of the season, are a lot higher than our team budgets. And it doesn't automatically follow that if your team budget is 10 times higher than the between Team A and Team B, that Team A is always going to win every game. It doesn't always follow that way, does it? You know, Newport County beat Leicester yesterday. So, but rule of thumb is we are dominated by finance in terms of putting a better team on court. So, we do not have access to some of the income streams that those European clubs have access to, and we'll never have access to some of those income streams, mainly coming from government, I would say. And that's just, again, back to the culture of sport in those countries, back to those sporting club models and how they're funded. So we have to play to our strengths, and our strengths are, effectively, we need secondary spend. We need the ability to operate and run other events that could also generate income for club activity. We need car park income. We just need to have full control over all our possible income streams, and we haven't had that. We haven't had that for 20 years. Because of our relationships with the different venues that we've been playing at. That's no detriment to those venues. That's just the way it works in this country. So I'm anticipating, set off against some new bills that we'll have, new overheads, excuse me, that we should be able to kick on again here and increase our turnover. And ultimately be able to continue to invest more in the team.
Does that automatically mean European competition? I mean, based on, obviously, everyone's had a little bit of a learning experience from Leicester, and I'm sure you've talked to Russell there about the bottom line elements of that. I mean, does it automatically say, yeah, once we have this, we're in Europe?
It doesn't automatically say, and I think we're going to have to, ultimately, we're going to have to run a 12-month business plan, you know, financial plan, to fully understand what it's going to cost to run this building. You know, we have an idea. We take learnings from Leicester and from other facilities in the city, for example, that are a similar size, but we don't really know. You know, I'm sat in a room here with lights on at the minute. Should the lights be on? Those things all start to, you know, come into play. I'm spending every day at the minute looking at edges of walls and thinking, geez, you know, that's been knocked to shreds already, that's going to need repairing. So it puts a very different light on the way that I would normally be thinking about how we finance an operation. So to answer your question, next 12 months we need to learn about how we can grow within this building. The idea and the interest in playing in Europe is because it's there to be done. Will it break even? Will it lose money? Will it make money? I don't know, but we just have to, you know, all of the calculations we've done in the past, and again, learnings from Leicester from this year. And I have an understanding from Kevin and Russell now. We we just have to get to a point where we now have a facility that means we are capable of hosting games, which we weren't before. And we just, you know, that's a big step forward for us in the first place. We just need now to get to a point where we understand what the financial implications are in order to make that journey. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't. It should be a goal, no question. Your question is how long? It won't be the next 12 months, but we need to look at it seriously after that.
Is there a slight frustration when you've put this business plan together and you look at the way that funding is set up in both in England and on a UK-wide basis, and you look at, say, even last week, last month, the huge amount of money given to netball just to pay national team players and other sports that you get handouts that don't really generate much at grassroots level, etc. I mean, having been around this for a very long time, relatively speaking now, do you still think that there's a sense of a raw deal for what basketball gets in comparison to other sports for the, I guess, what it brings back?
Good question. It's a prickly question, you know that, Mark. It's you know, we are where we are with basketball. I think we need to, as a group, as a whole sport, we still have some way to go in order to tell a clear story for the sport. I think in terms of funding, from a capital point of view, Sport England have been hugely supportive with us in this building. It goes to show that if we put the right plan in place and the right present it in the right manner, that organisations like Sport England will support and do support, and currently, you know, are supportive of the NGB home countries. But it's a challenge. It's a challenge. I think we've still got a little way to go in terms of finding the solution to move forward. Equally, though, we still have to find our own way, regardless of you know, government and public sector support for the sport. We've got to find our own path in terms of how we engage more young people in playing the sport, how we put an infrastructure in place across the country, geographically, to give kids proper access to basketball. I don't think we've squared that circle. I think it happens in hot spots, less so in other areas. But for me right now, we can only do what we do in this region, and, you know, I have to keep a focus on that.
What difference? I mean, forget it, aside wins and losses in the BBL and the WBBL, which you'd forget as well. But what difference in 5 years' time would you like to say this arena, this project will make in Newcastle, Tyneside, the area immediately around it, in the city at large?
I would say, Most importantly, and it's always been the bottom line for what we're doing here, is that whatever I do and Sam does in future, we've left the club in a sustainable place, which 10 years ago, 15 years ago particularly, you just could not have said that. You know, we would have good seasons and bad seasons, and we would keep going on, you know, but that's because it's, in a lot of respects, it's us, and we just don't give up. You want a club like this to know that it can operate regardless of who the new caretaker is, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years time. So I'd hope that what we've done here is properly embedded it now, for good. That's the first point. In addition to that, I just think the venue can do nothing more really than help to solidify everything that we're already doing with basketball in the community. Hopefully, helping to grow that even more than we already have, because we've got a home now. And I think that's the foundations mantra very much, that, you know, finally we can join the dots in terms of a young player seeing a pathway through and being able to understand what it all means, which has been difficult in previous years because, you know, all of the National League teams, for example, are training in different venues. They don't see each other. There's no way to knit the story together, whereas that's what we have now. Hopefully that will, you know, really embed itself the next few years. And equally just this building being a beacon for the local community, particularly in the West End, for things other than basketball, you know, sport in general and education, training, jobs, et cetera, that we, you know, we just really just become part of the area properly and bed ourselves in. I think that's the best way I can put it.
Last couple of things. The other partner in crime you've had in this, along with your wife, is of course been player coach Fab Flannoy. And I remember the end of last season when everyone asked him at the grand old age of 45, will you continue? And he made a very marked comment that he didn't want to miss out in playing in this new building because I think emotionally has been so involved in this journey alongside you. What's the state just now for you? You've always sort of said it'll be up to him what he does and where he goes next. But now that this sort of point has come where he will get to fulfill this and be with you to the end journey at this arena building, have you any sense at this point, or does he give you any sense of what he does past next summer?
The answer to that is no. we've always been season to season for how many seasons now? 15, is it? Maybe more, maybe 16.
From back when we were all young.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. so we continue to do that. You know, I mean, he's long past earning his stars to have a very big say in what his future destiny is at this club. He's still playing. Obviously, he's injured again at the moment, but we'll just play it by ear. And you know, he's opening his horizons at the same time. Lots of stuff going on behind the scenes, but as we are, we're in this season, and Fab's here. He's the coach, and long may that continue.
Final thing. I mean, obviously, you were a former chair of the league. And now you have yourselves. You have Leicester with your own arenas, Bristol with, you know, pretty much firm plans to build one, Sheffield trying to get those over the line, other clubs with this concept in mind. With the way that things are in the league sits at the minute, a new franchise coming in, no obvious worst team, I guess, anymore in the league, which we've had for the last few years. How do you assess the state of the BBL going into 2019?
I would say, I mean, right now it's tough, isn't it? It's really tough. I mean, we're are we fourth? When was the last time we were fourth? so that, you know, I have to say, with gritted teeth, that's great. It's great for the league that actually I don't know where our next win's going to come from. And you would hear that from every other team right now. Worcester are not a 1-15 or whatever the record is right now team. They're just not. They're very competitive. They gave us a hell of a game up here, you know, just before Christmas. So that's what ultimately we've been, you know yourself, we've been striving towards that one way or another for a very, very long time. And I would even say in the, you know, the hiatus, late 90s, it wasn't competitive 1-12, 1-13 then. You know, there was always a team that was, shall we say, a guaranteed win at the bottom of the league. That's absolutely not the case at the moment. And hopefully, you know, I've said to a number of people recently that while we were going through that period of winning a lot, teams that would step up in any given season would struggle the next, because it almost felt like they'd overpushed to try and reach where we were at that point in time. that's not the case anymore. Teams are now coming, and then they're coming again and coming again and coming again. So that's entirely positive for the league. We all know we've still got a little way to go here, but I the one thing I'll always say is this league is a lot stronger than maybe some perception believe it is. I look at the venues and the presentations around the vast majority of the clubs now, and the look of the venues, and we're all right. We're not in the large arenas as we were, but I think we're in more sustainable, better sized venues that on the whole are looking the part. We have clubs that are, as you said before, they're looking to build. So it all feels like it's very much going in the right direction. And the most important thing is, what does the league look like next season in terms of the makeup of clubs? And all you ever really want is that, well, it's clearly going to be the same clubs, isn't it? And maybe we're looking to expand from there. And that's, for me, all I've ever really wanted to see. It's tough being in a more competitive environment, that's for sure. But that from a business perspective has got to be where we need to be and what we need to build from.
Paul, it's been fascinating recounting the journey through to what promised to be a fantastic opening night this Friday night. Plymouth Raiders coming.
Yes.
The brand new Newcastle Eagles Community Arena. We wish you best of luck in your new home and a very successful year. And thanks for joining us on the MVP Cast.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for listening to the MVP Cast. You can catch us on any of your regular podcast providers or catch past episodes at mvp247.com. Just click on the podcast page. A new episode coming soon. But from me, Mark Woods, it's bye for now.